You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Guys, welcome back to Awkward Sex and City. I know it's been a long 2 weeks without me. Our next guest is someone that I love so much. We work together at Trader Joe's. Please welcome Stevie Edwards. And he has a great podcast coming up. Soft release, probably summer. Queer Literature Review. No website yet, but if you have any questions or requests, email at queerlitreview@gmail.com. In this episode, we talk about coming out, being from the South. We talk about gender euphoria, which I'd never heard before, but love that phrase. You guys, I really hope you enjoy. I had a great time. I learned a lot. Mind blown in a few places. And guys, enjoy. Thank you for coming back.
We need to be kinder to each other. We need to be able to validate each other because Lord knows no one else fucking will.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, why? She was like, I can see your nipples. And I was like, oh, cool. And I was like 11. Like I had no clue.
I did actually have some really good sex. But that was after, but that was after I started tea, which also makes you significantly hornier. So the stakes are high.
So we know each other, Stevie, from work. We are at Trader Joe's.
That we do.
Now we do. And you've been there a long time, right? Like,
At least a year and a half. It feels like 2 years, okay. But
your dream job is to work within like LGBT in a college.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it is my goal, my aspiration in life to eventually continue to work at a LGBTQ college resource center or student center of some kind. Mm-hmm. I was a graduate assistant at NYU's LGBTQ student center, which was really great. Oh yeah. Being in grad school wasn't really great, but like doing that work was really great.
Yeah.
It's a pretty old center in terms of like campus centers, and doing activism around LGBTQ identities while in the village, while in Manhattan, looking out to the arch on Washington Square where Sylvia Rivera led a protest before. Mm-hmm. No. So that was something really special to do work in, coming from Georgia to then do work in the heart of New York City. And to kind of have that perspective.
Absolutely. And like, so do you have a preference on college? Like, would you rather it be like in like a major city like New York or maybe like San Francisco or LA? Or would you want to go back more towards the Midwest or the South? Like, is there a preference? Is that something you think about? Or you're just like, any college will do?
I definitely think about it. And I think if you would have asked me a year ago, I would have had like this very nice like Google search parameters that I have plugged into my higheredjobs.com like job agent. But now I'm like, well, I'd love a job that pays me and has dental. Like that'd be super great.
Right. cool. Healthcare. Cool. Great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh, you're paying me how much? Whew, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
Carter, get in. Let's go. So now it's pretty common for entry level student affairs folks to kind of go to where the job is and mm-hmm. then bounce around. Like you'll be in a position for 2 years and then go to another position somewhere else a little bit higher up. So all this to say, I'm open to going pretty much anywhere. Although I would love it if I didn't have to go to LA or California. I'd love to go to somewhere that's less expensive than where I'm at now.
Yeah, that's very fair.
I don't want to go up in my cost of living.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, I agree. It's another reason why I'm like, I don't want to go to LA. You're too much and you're too bright. Like, I need, I need like anger. I need like darkness in a lot of my things. But so you came from Georgia and then you came to NYU. Were you like, this is amazing? Were you like homesick? Or were you like, how is it to be LGBT in like the Deep South? In like Marietta.
So for any other Georgia folks who are listening, I grew up in Gwinnett County in Duluth, which is very much suburbia. There's a lot to unpack, I think, around the Southern LGBTQ experience. And I think a lot of it exists also along lines of class and race. So growing up as an upper middle class white person in the South who is LGBT looks very different from someone who's from a different socioeconomic class or is a person of color, right?
100%,
so I definitely want to acknowledge that. But I think the thing that I was most excited about when coming up here is like scrolling through Scruff or Grindr or whatever the hell and being like, oh my God, I know none of these people because everyone, oh God, I went to school at the University of Georgia. I wasn't really out when I was at Duluth and I certainly wasn't on those apps. Were those apps around back then?
I don't know if they were because Scruff came before Tinder, right? Like, I feel like...
Which of the hookup apps came first, Tinder or Grindr?
I think it was it Grindr? I think it was Grindr. I think they were first, yeah.
You guys lead the way.
No, you really do. When it comes to technology, you guys like, let me figure out how to profit off of this immediately, and I respect that.
Well, everyone just... Anyone who's ever been in a small community, like everyone knows each other or has slept with each other or dated each other. Mm-hmm. And there's friend groups on top of a townie versus college student kind of thing. So there was not necessarily a lot of variety in the dating scene. So then I come up here and there's so many people and I like it. And there's a weird disposability about people up here in New York City. People treat each other as disposable.
We legit were just talking about that on the earlier podcast about like Tinder and like how we treat ourselves with like the swiping culture in a major city. Like it's definitely
I could suck
thing.
Someone's dick and then literally never see them again. Just like block them and be like, well, you don't exist anymore as a human.
Yeah.
It's wild. I had someone, I saw someone for a little bit and then we didn't see each other. And I was talking to someone at work and they were like, oh, are you going to acknowledge her if she comes into the store? I'm like, what the fuck? Yes, I'm going to, you weirdo. Yes, I am going to acknowledge her. I'm going to probably say, hi, how are you? And have a conversation because she's a human worthy of my respect and like attention.
Yeah.
God, people are so weird.
I will say, though, because I went through a really bad ghosting phase where like I would ghost people because I just I kind of needed like that emotional like presence in my life. And I was young and dumb and naive. And my worst fear is that I can 100% say I don't remember any of their faces. So my worst fear is that I do meet them and I don't remember. And to me, that is like the worst thing that you could do as a ghoster. And I feel like I have. I feel like I have met one of these people and like just forgotten, like, and just didn't know. I can't even name any of their names. That's how like disposable they were to me, which is fucking awful. And I admit that, but I'm also still okay that I did it. Like, I'm like, it got me to another place. I'm not sure how you feel about it.
You know, not everyone who comes into your life is going to stay. So I think this like flexibility and Lord knows, I can't remember everyone who we work with, what their names are, because we don't wear our shirts like when we're 4 hours before morning. Uh-huh. So they don't have their name tags. And I'm like, fuck, it's been too long. I should know your name by now.
I wear my name tag on purpose at work because I know I'm quiet and I know there's like half of that group does not know who I really am. So like,
and they keep calling you the other name, like of someone else who worked there. Like all Dorit keeps doing it all the time.
One of the managers kept calling me Amanda for months and I'd be like, Dorit, it's Natalie. And she'd be like, she's German. She's like, oh, I'm so sorry. And that's not a German accent, but she'll like forget. She'll still forget. I'm just like, Dorit. No, but like Stacia will be like, hi, baby. And then like, look, and then say my name. And I'm like, I'm okay
I respect
with that.
Yeah.
You're trying. Like I gave you that option. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like what you were saying, like it's so hard. Like now everyone's going to stay in your life. Yeah. And
I find at least my experience, it's coming from fucking mostly like cis men because they're the most easily accessible through Scruff and Grindr and stuff like that. So it's just so interesting interacting with cis men in this and then hearing about how just what the norm is for treating each other in terms of like being mean or being neglectful. I'm not talking about just like not just not remembering, like, yeah, that, you know, that's that feels neutral to me when
it's not purposeful in a way.
Yeah. Like sometimes you will. Sometimes some people won't. That's what I love about sex.
Yeah, but, same.
I don't know. It just feels very different being up here in New York City versus knowing that you have to live with the folks that you're around down in Athens.
Yeah.
So there's a difference.
And so you didn't feel comfortable enough to come out when before college, you were saying.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, nah.
Were your parents cool when you were like, hey, this is like, what's up?
Eh. I mean, it was a long process. Now we're in a pretty good place. It really, what I think the big kicker was that kind of got them up to where they are now, which my mom uses my name. And even when she emails me, because we're a very professional family, so we will email each other. but my grandfather died, and that really put things into perspective for them of like, huh. So thanks for taking one for the team, Grandpa. Yeah.
Thanks, Granddad, for dying.
Right. It was your time. But it was funny. When I came out as trans, my mom was like, oh, God, can't you like just be lesbian? And it's like suddenly queer is not as big a deal anymore. And I'm like, yeah, man, if I would have known that before.
Yeah. And that's what's like, as someone that does not know enough about trans or the whole like mental process of it to hear something like that, like, can't you just be lesbian? It's like, but that's like not what it is. You know, that's
not at all.
And I can't even imagine having to explain that to someone, let alone like your mother.
Well, something that I think is interesting and something that I don't really see represented a lot in media.
Mm-hmm.
And I see this because in working with college students, I am constantly bombarded with like, oh, I remember being there. Oh, yeah, I remember being there. Mm-hmm. Like in seeing this, and there's a lot of support and conversation around if your parents are shitty to you, absolutely do what you need to do to support yourself, to be yourself, all of this. But there's not a lot of conversation about gray areas in familial relationships and what does it look like when your relationship continues after this? Because I feel like there's a narrative of you come out and either they automatically accept you or they automatically disavow you. Certainly in the South, where I know people who have been kicked out and financially cut off and fired from their job, which is still legal in Georgia. Register to vote.
Damn.
But now we're in a really good place. I love my mom and dad, and I know they love me. And that was a common factor through this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really nervous talking to my friends about my familial relationship because they were really bad about trans stuff for a really long time.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. These things are messy and complicated, and I wish I could. I want my students to know that their first reaction isn't their last reaction.
That's a really good point.
And that there's a place they can be, just so they doesn't feel like, well, I've lost my parent at like 19 or 20,
mm-hmm.
when that doesn't have to be the case. But then there's this whole other narrative of like, oh, you know, as long as they apologize, it's fine, or just be super forgiving. And it's like, well, that's not, people should be able to feel and be in their place. I don't know what I'm saying. I think what I'm saying is, yeah.
No, I feel like you're saying it all, because these are kind of like the questions I was going to ask too, because the gray area is what in a way is kind of the scariest, because the black or white, the total acceptance or no acceptance, there's this definitive answer. Yeah.
I mean, I think definitely as much as I hate saying this and hearing it, and my parents have shared this with me of like, we had to grieve losing a daughter, which is absolute bullshit. I'm still me, like, very much so.
That makes me very angry.
Yeah. And just, but being able to get to a place where I was okay with them saying that, because now we've gotten past that place, because fucked up as it is, that was part of their process for, that was part of their journey in processing this. And yeah, that's fucked up, and it's still fucked up, and we still have a good relationship now. So what does it mean in this culture of you do one bad thing and suddenly you're canceled, right?
Yeah.
So like, I don't know, family's complicated. you know?
Well, this isn't nearly the same either, but like I, the past couple of years have realized like, oh, I'm bisexual. And so I still haven't told my parents, like they don't know. My family doesn't know. And I think they'd be fine with it. I think there would be a, it can be there, but like, I don't respect it type of vibe. Like, because also my dad is from like Danville, Virginia. Like there is a lot of Southern Baptists in my family. I have had family, you know, I don't talk to a lot of them anymore because they're not okay with just like the show. And that I openly talk about sex because, you know, like I have family members that went to. Like a lot of that. And I'm like, I'm good. And I haven't given anyone a chance because I've been like, well, you don't. Not my family. Like my family's like my parents, like they don't know this, but I'm talking more like my cousins and my aunts and uncles that are not okay with it. I'm just I have not given them a chance to explain themselves or like their side because I've been like
you don't have to
and you don't have to, but you have a really good point about like, but you stuck with it and that the first reaction wasn't the last and you've now hit another point of like of a relationship where you're happy and you feel safe with them and understood. And so is it selfish for someone like me to not even give them a chance because my pride and my ego was hurt that they weren't willing to see this thing that I do as valid in a way? But and I think that's like, if anyone doesn't want to like, you know, engage in their family, I think that's fine too. But I think your story and your personal perspective has like a really interesting point of sticking with it and like getting through the bullshit to the other side, because that is how people also like get educated and understand more, and we can stop with the fake news about LGBT and like sexual health and trans and all this stuff and same bathrooms and all that shit, you know? Like that's how doing that work, which isn't fair to put on the person that's already being stigmatized, it does help get to the next level though.
I think it's important that people know that there could be another place where the relationship could be like, if I would have told my 18-year-old self, yeah, things suck now, but eventually your dad will actually use he every now and then. He still fucks it up. Like, but like it's again, just how far we've come. And at the time when I was much more energetic and just I was all over the place, I was in a place in development and very much my first activism and learning about social justice. And I never thought that I would be in a place where I'm like, I can work with this. This is something that I can hold the nuance of where we stand and still be in this place. Because my family is very important to me. And oh, by the way, have you gotten your fruit basket and ID card?
Fruit basket?
For being bi LGBTQ?
Oh, I was like, is this something at Trader Joe's? No, I have not gotten my fruit basket.
Oh, no, no, no. This isn't from the Joe's. Although, like, they should send us fruit baskets, in my own personal opinion.
Yeah. No, I haven't gotten one yet. It's new. I haven't really talked like a lot. It'll get there when it gets there. I want to know why I don't want to talk about it with my family yet. Because like I do, I have a boyfriend, been with him for 4 years. Definitely had moments where I think I knew before him and he's fully accepting of it. And so great about when I was like, oh, yeah, by the way, love you, but I think I'm bi. been so great about it. But
there whole new meaning to love you, bye.
There has been like a am I a fraud? Like, am I, because that's new. I'm older. I'm, you know, I'm 30. I'm in my 30s. I realized this in my late 20s. I didn't experiment in college besides like drunk kissing girls, which I just thought was fun, like in a different way than actually like sexual. So there's that to it of like, what does it mean to realize it when you're late, like later in life, you know, which is, of course, like, you know, sexuality is fluid, gender is fluid. Everything's like a construct as well. Like all these words that people are like, this is bullshit, but it's not. It's real. Like there's like science backing it up. Like there's all this stuff. I don't know where I was going with this.
You are absolutely not a fraud.
Oh, thank
at
you.
At any point.
Thank you so much.
I don't know. If there's any, we need to be kinder to each other. We need to be able to validate each other because Lord knows no one else fucking will.
Yeah.
But I feel like especially folks with ideas bisexual, they get a lot of shitstorm their way with all the tropes about bi folks. Like that's a lot of, I would make a raspberry, but I don't want to accidentally French kiss the mic. I don't think we're there yet. We haven't had that conversation. But no, there are plenty and so many people who also have that kind of similar story. Mm-hmm. And it's, you're not alone in experiencing that, and also not alone in the imposter syndrome, right? That motherfucker pops up everywhere.
Everywhere. Career, mm-hmm. life, mm-hmm. like personal, professional. Oh yeah, 100%. The mm-hmm. whole, ugh, I hate imposter syndrome so much. So you were a grad assistant, and so you had kids come to you, right? You had students that would have questions for you.
Oh yeah, all the time.
Were there any that like kind of surprised you, that like you were like, oh, I don't know what to tell you, or I never thought of that when I was your age?
There were certainly things that were surprising.
Yeah.
The questions themselves were not the surprising part. It's where the conversations went and the context around them.
Interesting.
If
okay.
that makes sense.
Yeah. Like, no, totally.
And I think what's so cool about college students and the students that I worked with is these folks, these adults are so innovative and engaged with their own experience. So they have their own networks outside of college. They come in with these skills already developed and already with some understanding, either through internet searches, that kind of thing. I mean, there is the every now and then the, oh my gosh, I may be gay. What do I do? Like, that'll happen. Less common up here than it was in Georgia, where someone would come in and be like, oh, this is my first time hearing gay in a non-derogatory context.
Wow.
So it's very weird going from a Southern context to working with students up here at NYU.
Like as a child, like I think I told you, like Gina Bloom was talking when she was on a few episodes ago, mm-hmm. that when she was a kid, she mm-hmm. just knew something didn't feel right, but she didn't know what it was. Did you kind of have the same experience? Like you were just like, something's off, something's amiss, but I don't have like the vocabulary or mm-hmm. like the background, or we don't even have like Wikipedia yet to kind of explain things, or like scarletteen.com.
Oh, there was a pre-Wikipedia. Oh man,
I know, they're encyclopedias. Oh no, Britannica. It was like a CD-ROM that you had to put in.
Oh, that brings me back. No, but growing up I always had a lot of image issues, but a lot of that was stemming from being at one point the tallest person in my grade. I hit my growth cert very early. I've been 5'3 since like sixth grade.
Me too. I was 5'2, but yeah, I was like one of the tallest.
Wasn't it nice?
I felt weird. I also went to Catholic school, and like, so I like developed really quickly too, but like wasn't aware. And I had a nun tell me, because our like summer uniforms were like these weird like navy blue like shorts that went to your knees, and then a white shirt, and a nun had to take me to the side and was like, you need to start wearing a bra. And I was like, oh, why? And she was like, I can see your nipples. And I was like, oh, cool. And I was like 11. Like, I had no clue. Like, I didn't even know what a bra was yet at that point, because mm-hmm. I was a kid as long as I could be a kid, mm-hmm. which I'm very grateful for that. But yeah, so that was mine.
I mean, and I think a lot of that was also growing up around a bunch of girls who were twee, small things that were much better at makeup and mm-hmm. dolls and this traditional thing of femininity. So I always felt like a giant, kind of out of place. And mm-hmm. that even impacts how I move through the world now, even though I am now pretty small. Like, and this is evidenced by the fact of how many times I crawl through random stacks of produce and other crap in our cooler. Like, mm-hmm. I really kind of wedge myself in there, and I'm like, huh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Because you also, if you don't mind me saying, you also mm-hmm. have diabetes. So you also have to.
What?
You're like, oh, no.
Yeah, so yeah. Type 1 diabetes. Yeah.
Because you have to be constantly aware of that too, because our job is very, very active straight out the gate for like, for you, for 4 hours from 5 to 9 a.m. You're going, you're moving, you're shuffling like hundreds of pounds of product like left and right and getting on.
Like, but being on testosterone though and working at Trader Joe's, like I've gotten like, what? I'm flexing for those in the audience. And it's very nice.
Got some guns. I'm jealous. Yeah. I haven't gotten any guns yet. I just have my like.
Well, and it's wild, like, because that's closer to how my body used to be, because I've always played sports. I was in that tomboy niche, so I've always had muscles, but mm-hmm. like, it was a great motivation for lifting eggs. I was like, okay, I have testosterone in my system. It's much easier to put on muscle when you're on testosterone, when you're on T. I want to make sure that everyone knows what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about like sweet tea or something, because I'm from the South. I could understand if there's context. So
I was going to ask you, when you said tea for the first time, I wasn't sure if it was testosterone or something else.
Oh, no, it's testosterone.
Okay.
Yeah. to.
And is that all that you take for the transition? Is that the way
for me?
Yeah.
That? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of different ways. All kind of a mini roads to Rome situation.
Okay. See, I didn't know that. I thought there was like, if you would like to transition from either like point A to point B, it was like one thing.
I mean, if I may expound on
100%, like yes.
Transition, I think, as a term, might do a little bit of a disservice to what this whole thing is. It's not necessarily a transition going from one side to the other or a point A to point B, but more just, I would say it's like switching out lenses in a camera. You still see the same thing in essence, but how you see yourself, how you view yourself, how you choose to view yourself, what that looks like is very different. And I think there are plenty of folks who are non-binary or identify outside of the transgender kind of binary, which is very much rooted in whiteness and colonialism, right? And what transition looks like for each person is going to be very different. And I think there often is no end point medically because the focus is more so on feeling comfortable in your body and feeling present in your body. At least that's what it's always seemed like to me. If you want to get into like nittier, grittier things, like sometimes people will separate it into social transition and medical transition. I see this a lot of times in workplace documents in terms of whenever there actually is policy. They're like, when an employee is socially transitioning or medically transitioning. So sometimes they're split up in that way. But there is no requirements in the body department really to be trans or whatever gender you'd like to be besides just being it. I think that someone I knew back in undergrad talked about this because we used to do educational panels. Like we'd go around to classrooms. More or less the teachers didn't want to teach that day and they invited us. We're like, cool, let me tell you about my life. And then you can ask me questions anonymously about but God and gay. And you're like, yes, God and gay. More or less. but there's more than just the narrative of I changed. Like there's more than the narrative of I was born X and then I became Y. And there's also more than the narrative of I was always X. There's an in-between where our understanding of ourselves doesn't necessarily mean we've changed more than it just means we've grown as a person and in our understanding of ourselves and how we relate to each other. So there's this pressure to have a cohesive narrative for yourself and to write and to like fit into the social media insta-worthy kind of shareable story of what your life is like as a queer person. And that's in no way the case. Lord knows my shit is messy as fuck. And like, I didn't have a single one coming out moment. It was a very weird meandering conversation with my mom. Cause that's just how we work. It was very interesting. And there's a messiness there that I wish people would hold and acknowledge more. All of this to say, to go back to the original question, when I was younger, even though I had body issues, all that kind of fun shit, I very much identified as a woman. I was like, I'm going to be like Violet Baudelaire and I'm going to fight people. And I alternated between the two. So Hermione Granger and also Fight Me.
I love that.
And now looking back, it wasn't until maybe late middle school to high school that things got blurry, I would say. And that's when it's like, I don't have language for what's happening. I don't think I changed. Like, I don't think I went from I was a girl and now I'm a boy. I don't think of it in that kind of clear way. But I also don't want to degender myself in how I was back then.
Yeah.
It's just I remember hating myself so much when I was younger. And if anything, I'd love to be the one person who doesn't hate that girl and just lets her be whatever she wants to be. So I certainly don't want to rewrite my story just to be cleaner, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's such a, and I don't know where it comes from, but it is such a thing that
I'm protective of my past self and who I was before I was this.
Yeah, no, totally. And that totally makes sense. And we as just like society as a collective need to learn to be okay with not having a point A to point B story. Like you were saying, like that it is messy and gray And we have like the terms for it. We have like sexually fluid or like this is a construct, but we don't seem to be able to take those terms and to practice it when we're like listening in, if that makes sense. Like, cause like even you just telling me this, I was like, oh wow, I have been just so wrong on my ideas of what because I don't want to use the word transition, just like what someone is going through.
Well, language is going to inherently fail us, right? So just from the get-go.
You say so bluntly, but so truthfully.
Like, and I'm not the first to say this and like this. So we're going to, by necessity of we haven't quite figured out telepathy yet. I know there are theories. Don't at me. That's a different podcast. So as long as we acknowledge that language is inherently limiting, I think it's okay to kind of use the language we have access to. So transition is that kind of middle place.
I guess I mean more that I didn't even realize how limiting the language was until you pointed it out to me. Then I was like, oh, yes, this is very, very limiting, because now I can't even think of another word besides limiting. So like there is a lot of fetishization. Sort of, yeah. Okay, got the word. Because I am from the South, I can't say a lot of words. Like breakfast will get me. Breakfast.
Retweet, yeah.
And so there is a lot of like people trying to like own your narrative of a trans person's like bodies and a fetishization of it. But through that, have you experienced anything that like you found joy through that, or like any awkward experiences in any way or shape or form? Or are you just like, no?
So I am so excited to talk about gender euphoria with y'all and these upness, and because this is something that I fall into so much myself. We so often approach transness from a deficit model because holy shit, so many people are struggling and dying. And of those, primarily trans women of color, and trans women of color are also those who are most severely and most often fetishized in these ways and then face the very real consequences of that. I definitely have had very weird experiences on I don't really use Grindr because I wanted to avoid my students, and Scruff tends towards older. So I'm like, okay, I only want to date older than me, and it's much easier on Scruff than on Grindr, where it's like wee baby. Not wee baby. They're adults in their own right. We're not going to fuck. And like, so it's been this weird spectrum of someone who I've had folks who are just still kind of coming into their queerness, and it's like, oh, I can still hold on to some of my heterosexuality if I fuck a pussy, like, and that's kind of fucked up. We still had sex. Grad school, grad school's really hard, guys. Okay, like, and definitely some interesting times at sex parties, because it's always dark in sex parties, right? Which, by the way, is inaccessible as fuck. I have such bad vision, and also in general, I want to see somebody.
No, but I didn't even think of that. Like, that's just dark.
Well, and that's also, I think, really rooted in cis-sexism. Cis-sexism. I'm going to say it slower because I just put everything together. Because having this sexy ambiance with all dark room, that's based on the assumption that everyone has the same genitals and you all know what's going to happen and you all know how you're going to fit together. Wow. When that's almost never the case. Like, genitals are fucking weird. I mean, for literally everybody.
Like, even when like you are just like with one partner and you know their genitals, like it doesn't always like fit. Like, you're like, this doesn't make sense. I like that. My mind has just gotten like blown, like just like by that like statement. Like, I didn't even like think of that. Like, whoa. It's like I just got like high on like learning. Like, what just happened?
I mean, it was still a fun party, but like, yeah, it was way past my bedtime. You know, again, with those 5 a.m. shifts, it does not make. No. Oh, man.
It's hard.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah, so sex is interesting. We can come back around to like different stories and other adventures and dalliances. I think of grad school as like, this has been my messy period, you know, where I'm learning about me. But I was so excited to be on this podcast and to talk to you not only about you know, sex and fun things and laughter. And I just genuinely like talking to you. Mm-hmm. So it's also nice not to talk when someone's like, where's the cream cheese? And it's like 2 feet to your right, ma'am, as it's always been. Saw you last week.
One of your days off, this lady came up to me and was like, do you have fruit?
I was like, I got your fruit right
here. I'm going to hit you. Like, the produce section is like right fucking here. Like, I was so mad. And we were like in the meat section. So I was like, how the fuck did you miss it? Like, it's the first thing. It's really hard to actually have conversations when like there's just like customers all around you.
Unless you're in the box.
Unless you're in the box.
Jeff and I go on the wildest fucking tangents. I don't know what people hear on the other side because we'll just go into silly voices too. So like I'm sure the kids get a hoot. Sometimes when we're back there, we'll make the noises of like chickens or cows. Like we'll cluck and like and we see like a little kid and we're at their eye level crouching down. We're like, burr,
burr, burr, burr. Oh my God. You either scarred them for life or they're like, oh, that's the chickens are just back there.
The parents are like, please tell me you know what that sound is. but I was so excited because for me, mm-hmm. Sex has been a part when I enjoy sex so much and being intimate with folks mm-hmm. because it's one of the few moments where I'm really present in my body mm-hmm. and really happy with my body. And I didn't start having sex until I first started transitioning with T. And there's a lot of different issues that we all have on top of there being nobody to fuck down south.
Doesn't help.
Well, actually, no. I'm going to take that back because I did actually have some really great sex. But that was after I started T, which also makes you significantly hornier. So the stakes are high. but for so much of my life, due to body image issues, dysphoria, I never really was present. I was very much a space cadet, right? Mm-hmm. A kid with their head in the clouds, all of that. And then after I got language around transness and gender, suddenly my gender dysphoria is so much more acute because I can name that hurt. And I can see the way that hurt is around and how that feels and almost gets deeper. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't been until for the longest time I didn't want to have sex because I didn't want to be there for it. I didn't find myself sexy. Like the thought of someone else, I'm like, yeah, 10 out of 10, good Amazon review. but then I'm like, oh, wait, I also have to be there for sex to happen. And it's like, ooh, like that part completely destroys the experience, did destroy any desire to partake in that. It's very important to contextualize that my sexual debut, as it were, was with two very close friends of mine who held me in that and were so supportive. And we went to Waffle House afterwards. Aww. So it's this really precious moment to me. And I'm really lucky that I got to start off. Like, I'm glad I didn't have sex earlier because I felt ready when I did.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. And also, yes, you did hear right. My first sexual debut was a threesome.
I know. I was going to say, like, that's impressive.
Y'all, I love threesomes. I think they get a bad rap. But, like, listen, with threesomes, you can tap in, tap out. Like, so much less pressure. Really.
I think the bad rep has got to come from straight people and monogamy and jealousy. And mm-hmm. I think, like even like in a poly relationship, like from what I've been told, like there's still jealousy a part of it. And like jealousy is like a natural emotion to feel. Mm-hmm. And when you communicate it well, it can even make like your relationship stronger. So mm-hmm. I think there's just threesomes. There's just like a lot of fear behind it. But again, in a place like New York or when you're with you're in a situation where you're very comfortable and it's very safe, it's so easy to have one and to be in one.
Well, and I think this is something that is also so great about being trans and being in this body. Because again, we don't have a chance to talk a lot about the euphoria we feel and how much we like about this because we're so often having to advocate for ourselves mm-hmm. and try to beg people to see us as human. So, and the quickest way through that, or at least the most so we end up using ourselves as tools for activism mm-hmm. and we don't. And we treat ourselves like tools and we treat our stories like tools. But there's a lot of joy to be had. I am very much T for T, trans for trans. I love having sex with other trans folks because the communication, the place where we're coming in from is just so different to when I'm hooking up with the cis guy. Because these conversations they feel almost second nature. Like I don't have sex until we talk about what we call our body parts. What are you okay with? What kind of before care, after care? And like, this isn't exclusive to kinky sex, like just any sex of like, hey, I want you to know that I still value you as a friend, even if we don't have sex today. Even if we don't, we're already used to and practiced at navigating gender and how fucked up gender is, that in relation, at least for me, like, yeah, okay, let's talk about sex. Like, but this is a trigger for me. This is something that I'm not cool with. And it's like, yeah, no, I hear that. Let's party.
Does that, well, one, that sounds amazing. Like the most, like I've never heard like that much communication happening before sex.
Now don't get me wrong. There are definitely like fuck people. Well, I'm trying to think of a gender neutral term for fuckboys, but there are definitely folks who are like super constipated in the communication department. Don't get me wrong. But like when I think about the joyful experiences I've had with other trans folks in sex, in intimacy, it has been in spaces of open communication, transparency, dialogue, and the rejection of the narrative of sex, which sex doesn't have a narrative. It does. Where this, you have a linear line to climax and then it's pillow talk and done, where it could really be just this extended period of intimacy where what sexual activities, at what intensity, at what time is all very fluid and organic to that moment. And it takes so much pressure off of folks to perform or for their bodies to react in a certain way because bodies are fucking weird. I don't know how many cis men I've had sex with. Well, one, I don't know how many cis men I've had sex with. but also, well, they're almost, they will psych themselves out. Like they won't get hard or they'll get soft. And then they're feeling really self-conscious about it. And they're apologizing to me about it. And then I feel their self-consciousness and their kind of like nervousness and masculinity because I'm very empathetic. So then I feel bad for them, but I don't want them to see that I'm feeling bad for them. So it's this positive feedback loop when it's like, we can spoon for a little while. Like we can make out. There is more than just this main event of sex.
Yeah. And that's something I learned recently too. And as a, that's a very, very straight thing to think that like, it is just like this, you make out, you fuck one, both or none come. Like that there's like this, there is this climax. There is this hard ending when really great sex isn't. It could really flow. I do want to know, and this could probably be such an ignorant question. Does it take any of the spontaneity out of sex when you have these conversations beforehand? When you're like, what, how do you like to, like, what would you like this to be called? Like, what are, what's triggering, et cetera, et cetera? Does that at any, like, is it still very spontaneous? Like, how is, like, for some reason in my mind, I see it as like a checklist. Like, okay, you're good. This is what you want here.
It can definitely seem like a lot, right? Especially for me, no. I think it allows spontaneity. I think it allows creativity and inspiration within a safe and open place. And not safe as is, not safe as in we can't get hurt, right? Because we can harm each other even unintentionally, but in a place of, this allows us to try new things and to push into some different dynamics. What I love about entering sex from that mind work is you can say, hey, I'm feeling overwhelmed by trying to make sure I don't hurt you. Right? And that is, we can name that and we can hold that and we can explore that, right? Grace can be given and received in all sorts of different ways. And what that looks like is different for every person. Every person's relationship with their body, with their relationship structure, all of this is different. So there's plenty of folks who believe the exact opposite. Well, not the exact opposite, because that also implies a binary, but they believe very differently than me and would disagree. But for me, I see it as a place where you can name what has previously felt unnameable, including things where we feel like we're coming up short and be allowed to be imperfect and messy, because we are messy. And we will always be messy. So, and I think it just makes it so much easier to have conversations of, nah, I actually don't want to do X tonight, this kind of sex act, you know? I actually would rather not. I don't know. Like, it's really great. I hope everyone gets a chance to have sex where you can just know that you are in complete control of your own boundaries and what that looks like, and that you're really present. I feel present with someone when I'm in that kind of space. Yeah. And that's what I love about sex. And I feel present in my body and I'm enjoying my body. And it is so convenient to have a hole that self-lubricates, just saying. And like,
yeah, it helps a lot.
I really do like being a trans guy. Like, honestly, like, this is so weird being tacked onto the back of a very like, stern sentence, but just real talk, I can go to town on pasta and bottom in the same night. And it is amazing. Oh my God. It is just spectacular. Like, I don't really do a lot of anal stuff, mostly because I eat whatever the fuck I want and I have a perfectly accessible hole right upstairs.
I hope you just learned as much as I fucking did. Thank you again, Stevie, for coming. And again, queerliteraturereview@gmail.com. And it'll be out hopefully in the summer, if not fall or winter. But you'll have it soon.